She manages Housing and Urban Development's day-to-day operations, including its $45 billion annual budget, and approximately 8,500 employees. As Women's History Month comes to a close, she's been sharing her experiences to help other women build successful careers in government. Nani Coloretti is the Deputy Secretary at HUD. She started by telling me about growing up under the mild skies of Hawaii.
The weather is really different. It's quite tropical there, and it doesn't actually vary, and they don't change their clocks back and forth, so it's very near the equator and standard. So I don't know if you spend any time in Hawaii or in an island community, but I think the beauty of the area just makes folks become more mellow and a little bit kind of, you know, less stressed, it seems like.
And are they more accepting of women in whatever role women choose to pursue?
There's a tradition there. It's very expensive, as you can imagine, to live on the island. And so there, for many, many years before this trend really picked up in the U.S., had both parents working, particularly in the immigrant communities, which is basically everybody except the Native Hawaiians. You know, those that came there without a lot of money, most of the people that immigrated there, both parents worked. And so when I was growing up, I thought everybody's mom worked. I didn't realize that that wasn't really the norm.
All right, so today, if we fast forward, You have risen pretty fast in the federal government after working. I know you were in the San Francisco as a city official there.
Yeah.
Now you are basically in charge of operations for a $45 billion annual budget.
Yeah.
More than 8,000 employees. And you've been giving messages to other women in the workforce over this past month. Tell us what some of the things you've been saying are.
So we did a panel for Women's History Month, and it was really fantastic. I got to sit up there with two other really strong and amazing women in our agency. One works on ending homelessness, and one is our chief human capital officer, or acting chief human capital officer. Just talk about our life stories. People are very interested in sort of how did you get to where you are today, but also what are some things that help as you're kind of getting more and more responsibility in the working world. And so there are a couple things that I pointed out on that panel and just believe, you know, that work for me. One is the power of the network, and that is not to be understated. And I've probably talked to you about this before on your show, Tom, but just really kind of being curious about people, understanding what they do, using folks as a soundboard, and keeping in touch with people has been something that's really helped me throughout my career so far. And the other thing in terms of, well, a lot of young women in particular wonder about, can you be an executive or can you be someone with a lot of responsibility and also be a mom? And I think that there are definitely ways to structure your life that way, including relying on your network, but also having a really great partner to help you, sort of been helpful to me.
I guess I'm a little surprised maybe that at this point in the 21st century that the career requirements, I shouldn't say requirements, the career considerations for women still vary to some degree from those of men.
We've made great progress. That is no doubt from the 1970s when my mom was working and raising kids. The challenge remains, though, that women still, even in two-parent working families, the women still spend more hours also taking care of the home. That's sort of both an expectation and in some ways in the kind of what I like to call high-performing communities, also just an expectation of yourself. You know, you can't, you know, have people over if your house is messy. You don't, you know, you have these standards and you need to kind of keep cue to them. And so what that means is you as the female and the, you know, the mom and the relationship, if it's the, might be the one doing all that. And so there's been
Defense
a lot
contract
of
audit
conversations
agency has
around that, but it is still an issue.
Because my first job just was after college was 1977, a little rinky-dink newspaper, but the publisher was a woman.
Okay.
And it never seemed strange to me, actually, at that time, even though it was close to 40 years ago. And she went on to a great career, became an executive at Dow Jones and Company, and then we kind of lost track. But it didn't seem that strange to me, and I'm one of those guys that are old enough to maybe have a different attitude. And so I'm wondering, what is it like in a place as large as HUD, where you've got old guard, new guard, young, old, every persuasion of person, as you do in the federal government?
HUD it's a really fantastic place. It actually has a much higher percentage of senior executives that are women than even in the federal government. So that is really a fantastic sort of something to highlight about HUD. We sort of outpace the federal SES percentage of women by 10 percentage points. So that is really fantastic. What that means is that here, it is actually not so unusual to have a lot of women in a high-level staff meeting. There have been other places I work where that wasn't the case. But here it is more of a tradition, and it actually is a wonderful, wonderful thing about HUD.
We're speaking with Nani Coloretti. She is the Deputy Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. So do you look out over an audience in this past month in the panels you've been on, or just in meetings, and you see maybe women that are much younger or people coming into the workforce? Do you find that they look at you and maybe there's a connection that, gee, if she could do it, so can I?
I've had a young woman tell me that, which is, hey, look, I'm really, you know, I'm at a juncture, critical point where I'm thinking about, you know, my next job, my next move. And these are people who are, you know, everyone is, you know, young women and men, they're very motivated and have great aspirations. But the women in particular ask, how can I structure this? Is this possible? It's funny that you were saying this is a surprise. It's really kind of a natural thing to ask yourself if you're coming up in the world, like, hey, can I do that next thing, right? I think that if women feel like they, young women in particular, feel like they know you, they often can reveal that just not sure if it's going to work, you know? And so it takes a lot of energy to basically counteract that self-doubt, right? Of course, I am an eternal optimist and a good troubleshooter, but I always tell people, absolutely, this can happen. You know, I think it's part of it, though, is to maybe try to adjust needing everything to be perfect all the time. That might be something that could be helpful for people who are trying to figure out how to run a house and have a full-time difficult job.
And one thing we've learned, I guess, over the past however many years, is there might be young men that have characteristics that used to be correctly or incorrectly assigned to young women. That is maybe a lack of desire to assert yourself in certain situations, or, you know, insecurity in various situations that maybe males were more secure in. But now we know that there are males and females that might be younger coming up that have the same characteristics. So in many ways, you've got to be on the lookout for that characteristic, regardless of the gender.
That's right. The world is changing, and the best way to handle change is to be always learning and to be adaptable. And that's the same truth no matter the gender. I have a 13-year-old son, and I can tell you the young women that he, the tweens or teens that he's going to school with, are running circles around him for sure. and that's just the girls in his class are better at some of the skills you need to kind of do well at school. He's doing really great at school. It's just I can see that there's just a different way he's thinking about the world. So it's really exciting to see him kind of grow and do that and grow that self-confidence that you need to be able to navigate, be adaptable, and kind of be comfortable with an ever-changing world.
And one of the qualities of leadership maybe is knowing the rules so well, like a manager, that you know which ones you can break in the interest of the organization. Is that something that you convey to those people coming up through the ranks?
When you say rules you can break, do you mean social, societal rules? Is that what you're thinking about?
No, I just meant organizational or institutional little rigidities that creep in that you know how to cut through, and maybe it's not technically all right, but it somehow furthers the ultimate goals of the organization.
I think of it like a growing a toolkit. So not every strategy or approach is going to work in every situation. And so part of being a good leader and a good manager is to diagnose that carefully and to try something and to be okay. We always say this, but it should be okay to make a mistake. And I think, particularly in the federal government, we need to allow ourselves to do that maybe more often. It's a very risk-averse undertaking because so many people are counting on us and watching.